Welcome to the Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. Young black men in a cluster of neighborhoods in Miami-Dade County are the most common victims of gun violence who wind up at Jackson Memorial Hospital. That's what the data show in a new study out this week from the University of Miami School of Medicine. Researchers looked at over a decade's worth of gunshot wound victims coming to Jackson and found the number of victims rose each year through the study. Victims were most likely shot in the neighborhoods they lived in, and those areas were usually poor neighborhoods with mostly black residents just north of downtown Miami. The study comes the same week as four people were wounded in a drive-by shooting in South Dade County. Two died, one hurt in northwest Miami. And Martavius Santiago allegedly shot and killed his 13-year-old sister at his family as his family celebrated his 17th birthday in Florida City. WLRN spoke to Santiago for our Young Survivor series back in February. He'd been a gunshot victim himself. He was shot in the leg about a year after his younger brother had been shot.
I never knew how he was feeling until I got shot. We're hanging around the wrong crowd of people. This is what happens. Now, the dudes we used to run with, all in jail. And we still out here.
Yep.
I thought I was going to die. But I just survived.
Martavius Santiago is now 17. He's being held on an aggravated manslaughter of a child charge. So gun violence, the cycle, the economics, and new research exploring where it happens is up first this week on the Florida Roundup. Join the conversation at 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. What are the strategies to address the violence in neighborhoods where it's concentrated here in South Florida? How can communities outside those areas respond to help the overall region? And have you experienced gun violence? Have you experienced it in your neighborhood, in your household? 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576 is the phone number to join the conversation. Nadege Green, WLRN reporter, Doug Hanks covering the Miami-Dade County government for our partner, the Miami Herald, along with us. And Dr. Tanya Zickerson is along with us as well. Zackerson, excuse me, doctor. She is the trauma surgeon at Jackson Memorial Hospital and one of the co-authors of the study. Dr. Zackerson, let's begin here. What did your study find out about who's being shot in Miami-Dade County?
So we were curious to look at our database at the Ryder Trauma Center over at least 10 years, 11 years to be precise, from 2002 to 2012. We were curious to see who was being shot, where were they coming from, what neighborhoods were being affected by gun violence. Of course, observationally, when you're working in the trauma bay, you get a sense for the type of patient that comes in over and over again that gets shot. But we wanted to formally and scientifically appraise this and measure this. So what we found was very similar to our suspicions and is sadly no different from other large cities across this country in the United States, where we're seeing young black, and what we mean by black is Haitian and African-American men, largely, coming in being shot over the course of the 10 years, what we found, and that's disproportionate. There's also a disproportionate number of Hispanic males that are coming in shot as well.
By but disproportionate, by, you mean there's, as a percentage, larger number of
whites.
Victims than whites.
Correct.
As represented in the overall population.
Correct. Yeah. Yes. And so, but our concern with the study, I think that something that was very salient that came out of this work is we were concerned because the number of people getting injured by firearm-related violence is going up. The number of mortality or people dying from firearm-related violence is going up as the years are progressing. And the patients that are coming in are getting younger and younger. And again, that holds for our black populations as well as our Hispanic populations, but largely for our black populations. And of course, no surprise, we did a geospatial analysis where we geocoded the addresses of the patients coming in shot. And they, of course, come from our most economically marginalized neighborhoods in Miami. So Overtown, Liberty City, and the neighborhoods that essentially have, it seems like they've been forgotten almost by those in charge, if you will.
Nadege, how important is a study like this for Miami-Dade County to put the research focus on what anecdotally the doctor has experienced firsthand in the trauma center?
I think, for one, it's not a surprise, especially as a reporter. You cover these stories and you see it over and over again where it's happening. But if we're going to talk about policy and enacting thoughtful policy around what is happening, you need data. It's not enough to go with, you know, news articles or clippings and say, look, we know these things are happening because we know these things are happening. But when you're talking about policy and what is going to change things and how do you start planning in a very real intentional way to reduce gun violence in a neighborhood, you need data. You need to know where this is happening and you need to be able to drill down where within the county it's happening. And that just does not exist.
This is, Doug, the first real significant scientific look at Miami-Dade County and shootings over the past decade and gun victims and gun deaths. How could this study be greeted by policymakers in the county and law enforcement?
Well, I think it'll sort of add to the mountain of evidence of this is an urgent matter that we need to do something about or try to do something about or appear to be doing something about. And there's been it's been a really big political driver in the last year. Everyone's talking about it. But when push comes to shove, I think when there's some legislative hard decisions to make related to sort of concentrated poverty in these neighborhoods, that's when you run up against resistance.
Yeah, and the schism was highlighted just a year ago when WLRN, The Herald, and Univision 23 partnered on a poll in the community asking what was the most important issue for Miami-Dade County residents. And over 500 people were polled, and for whites and Hispanics, certainly for whites, the most important issue was traffic. For white for whites, youth violence was only 5% the most important issue. For Hispanics, 18% said youth gun violence was the most important issue. For blacks, it was by far, almost by a factor of two, the most important community issue. You remember this poll,
yeah,
Doug. 34% of blacks in this poll identified youth gun violence as the most important issue, almost twice as important as jobs in the economy.
Yeah, I mean, it showed the divide there so starkly. And it was just sort of a shocking result to, I mean, not the black answers, but the answers from the white respondents. It's like, yeah, traffic is rough, but come on, you're reading the same headlines everyone else is.
Right, traffic is difficult, but the carnage, Dr. Zacherson, that you're seeing week in and week out is captured in the data and really was captured a year ago in just this this public opinion poll.
And just to add to that and to really highlight something that was, I think, the most disturbing for us and my co-authors, Justin Stoller, who's a faculty at University of Miami in the Department of Geography, and Laura Zabib, who's a student of public health right now. What actually was almost the most disturbing out of this study was the fact that where all this gun violence is occurring in these very poor enclaves in Miami, nothing has changed over a decade. It hasn't shifted to other neighborhoods, or there's been some political will or motivation to address this issue to at least change that geospatial distribution.
The gun violence year after year remains concentrated in these zip codes, in these areas.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. Nothing has changed. And you're talking about a body count of over 4,500 people that have been injured or killed by guns that is totally preventable.
Nadege, so how do we talk about this gun violence issue that includes race, clearly, just anecdotally with the public opinion poll that we cite from a year ago and now the study out from Dr. Zacherson's group this week, when the study clearly finds this link between victims of gun violence and race?
I think it's a real conversation about Miami, and we're just very segregated. This is a very segregated place. We don't like to talk about it. We talk about Miami, oh, it's so diverse. We're diverse by default, not by intention. And when we talk about diversity in Miami, it is very much split around class and income. Black Miami is a small community. And so when, you know, we're like, well, people read headlines, people are reading headlines and it may not touch them. But in Black in Miami, you're only 1 degree, maybe 2 degrees separated from what's happening among gun violence. I will tell you that even as a reporter who grew up in Miami, I have covered the deaths of people I know. I have King Carter is a cousin of a classmate of mine, 6-year-old. I had to cover
that. Who was shot and killed.
So it's not, you're not far removed from it, even if you no longer live in the neighborhoods, right? You might live up in Miami Gardens, you might live in Homestead, but these interactions, these are networks, and they touch the same people over and over again. In the Northside District alone, where I've covered a number of gun violence incidents, you have family members and friends and church members who are going to funerals every other week because someone is getting killed. Everyone doesn't experience that the same way in Miami-Dade County. So I just don't think everyone is touched by it the same way, and so you don't have that same impact. It doesn't, it's not enough to read a headline.
Right, right. Yeah, you want to personalize it and experience it firsthand. 800-743-9576 is that telephone number. Share your experience, or frankly, lack thereof experience with gun violence, as the case may be here in Miami-Dade County. Does it not impact your life, in your estimation? 800-743-9576 is the telephone number. Let's go to Miami, where Julie is joining us on the Florida Roundup. Julie, you're on the radio. Welcome. Go ahead.
Hi, yes, I'm a licensed counselor, and I have gone to that area many, many times, doing counseling in that area. And I have been very shocked by the amount of violence and the amount of trauma that is occurring within these neighborhoods and the way that the families are affected. And it just seems to be the norm, which was very, very, again, shocking to me as a counselor, seeing that they're used to this kind of violence happening almost that they expect that at some point in time that it will occur.
Julie, we appreciate the input. Nadege, you were among our reporters on our Young Survivors series, which examined a number of personal stories regarding teenagers and those affected by gun violence. Since then, we highlighted the story in my lead-up here of the now 17-year-old who'd been touched by violence and now is accused of killing his 13-year-old sister accidentally, he claims. But other folks that we featured in that reporting just 6 weeks ago have been touched by gun violence in just the matter of a few months.
Like I said, it's a network. When you look at who gets shot in Miami-Dade County, and if it keeps happening in the same neighborhoods, there is going to be a connection. People who know each other, friends of friends who know each other. And to be clear, when we talk about the issue of gun violence and who it touches, it's not just the direct victim, the person who has a bullet hole in them, right? Like, that is just one victim of gun violence. The effect of gun violence in these neighborhoods means you have preschools that have codes for when shootings happen, and you have three-year-olds who are ducking because they know that there's a shooting happening. The effect of gun violence in these neighborhoods mean you have traumatized kids who have to take FSA testing the next day, but the night before there was a shooting and there were police officers outside knocking on their doors wanting to know what happened. They have to go to school the next day and take a test and pass that test. You have teachers who are traumatized because they have students who are constantly being shot or who have a family member who are being shot. And so after your brother gets shot, you have to go learn in that environment.
Doug, the picture that the data paints, the stories that Nadege has reported on, you have sat in the county commission hearings and opened legislative debate around certain policies that they'd like to use to prescribe to go after some of these strategies. What are some of those that have been used or have been discarded?
Well, you know, one of the push recently is to target sort of a very small segment of at-risk youth that they are sort of projecting, given various factors, will either be a victim or a perpetrator of gun violence, and having police get involved with them directly. So, you know, sort of some social service meets law enforcement. But I think there's two things to look at. Barbara Jordan, whose district includes Miami Gardens.
Miami-Dade County Commissioner.
Yeah, Miami-Dade County Commissioner. She said, listen, we need to stop all of the affordable low-income housing being in these one sort of area. We need to spread it out. So let's make developers from now on provide workforce housing mandatory in developments, and we'll give them more density if they agree, or they can pay into an affordable housing fund. Got killed by the development industry, et cetera. So that was a clear test, didn't pass. I think the other one's going to be coming. It's going to be interesting. We've all heard about this. I don't know if we all heard about it, but there's a SMART plan out there, which is supposed to be an historic expansion of rail. Very expensive. One estimate, $6 billion.
This is a transportation plan to expand Metro Rail in Miami-Dade County.
Correct.
Six different rail lines.
Six corridors, right. And they haven't quite said it yet, but they're probably going to be a Ford, I don't know, one, two, whatever it is, to begin. There's going to be some major decision coming on what goes
which
first.
Which one to begin, right.
Yeah, and that North Corridor goes straight through this map. And what a way to bring prosperity to a neighborhood. Or at least a potential for prosperity. And will the community say, hey, no matter what else is going on with traffic, we're going to bring it through this area that needs it?
Dr. Zacherson?
And just to add to what Nadej was saying earlier, and Doug as well, is yes, this is an issue of racism, clearly, but I think even deeper to that, a lot of trauma surgeons, especially with public health training, are now talking about the term structural violence. These communities are reflective of structural violence. What do I mean by structural violence? It's a concept that came out in the 1960s, which is essentially the avoidable impairment of fundamental human needs. Because of barriers such as racism, sexism, poverty, anything where you're essentially telling your child, don't go outside and play when your child's 5 years old because we're worried you're going to get shot. If anyone wants to see what structural violence looks like, I invite them to watch the movie Moonlight to get a feel. And you're expecting kids surviving in those neighborhoods that are food insecure, where they're fearing for their livelihoods on a daily basis, where they're going to maybe public school systems that are underfunded chronically and cannot compete to the private system, where there's a school-to-prison pipeline, where the minute you have a criminal record, you simply cannot gain and have any gainful employment, and we're expecting them to enroll in the University of Miami and go to medical school, say? That is clearly impossible. Well, it's actually not impossible. It's highly improbable. There's a 4% chance of doing this because we measured this in inner city kids in Baltimore over 30 years.
There's been other
highly improbable.
And just in terms of income mobility, the Federal Reserve has looked at income mobility in terms of those that are making the lower 20% of income and the odds that they're able to, over the course of their lifetime, move to the highest 20% of earners. It's less than a 10% chance in the United States to make that kind of income mobility in one lifetime. That's Tanya Zacherson. She's with the Jackson Memorial Hospital United, the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine, behind a gunshot victim and gunshot fatality study over the course of 11 years, looking at those gunshot victims who came into the trauma center at Jackson Memorial. Let's go back to the phones. Line two from Miami. Mike is on the telephone. Mike, welcome to the Florida Roundup. Go ahead. You're on the radio.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm calling real quick because I grew up in a section in Hialeah and I was literally nicknamed Vietnam. And during the 80s, it was really bad neighborhood. It's a much better neighborhood now than it was then. And the last 5 years of my life, I worked in Little Haiti. So I'm very, very clear as to what entails when you're talking about minority shootings and minority violence. My biggest concern, my pet peeve, what gets me angry is these things can be fixed within the community. The problem is within the community. No outside force, legislation, blah, blah, blah is going to fix it. The community has to fix itself. It's got to cure itself from the cancer that lives in there, the thugs, the criminal element. That is the only way to fix that issue.
Mike, let me ask you, what do you attribute the change in the neighborhood you grew up in Hialeah from when you were a youth to today?
That's simple. When people started to go to jail and when the community started to say, we don't want this garbage in our neighborhood anymore, we want to keep our children safe, we want our children not to get shot at anymore, and they take a stand and they say, that guy over there did it. That guy shot up this neighborhood.
Gotcha. Mike, we appreciate the input. Dr. Zacherson, your thoughts on Mike's prescription.
So we looked at why there was a dip nationally in homicides and gun violence in the 1990s. Mass incarceration was found to play around a 5% role in that. There are other factors, which we don't have time to get into, that account for that. Incarcerating the quote-unquote bad kids as a downstream response simply adds to the dual problem that overlaps with gun violence of mass incarceration in this country. We're already the most over-incarcerated country on earth with 2.3 million people in jail.
Let me ask you about the other part about Mike's comment, though, is it's the community. And Nadej, you've done a lot of reporting on the no-snitch culture that we've talked about and has been reported on. And Mike's point that he thinks that the community, in his estimation and in his experience in the Hialeah neighborhood he grew up in, began to stand up.
I mean, you hear that a lot, but I will tell you, being out in the community and talking to people like parents of murdered kids, they do talk.
Yeah.
They talk and they have very close relationships with the state attorney's office. There are people who will witness and come forward. That doesn't always mean that a case sticks. In a lot of these cases, sometimes you'll get an arrest, But it doesn't mean it necessarily sticks. So I think it's a lot more complicated than actually having people come forward and speaking out against the violence, because I think that do happen. That does happen. And sometimes it does not. But it's not enough to just say, you know what, that that's just it. Mm-hmm. Because we've seen that that's not the case. And we've seen many people who have come forward who do talk to the police, who have good relationships with police officers. But that in of itself has not fixed the 11-year problem, more than 11 years, yeah. I would argue. But what we're looking at in the study, right. when you're talking about just the pervasiveness of gun violence in these neighborhoods.
Dr. Zacherson, real quick, your thoughts, and we'll go back to the phones.
So just very quickly, if you look historically in this country, when gun violence was at its lowest, intra-community gun violence, especially amongst African-American communities, that would have been in the 1960s during the time of the Black Consciousness Movement, especially when things like the Black Panther Party were very active in neighborhoods. That was destroyed by the FBI and the COINTEL program by J. Edgar Hoover.
In terms of the Black Panther
Correct.
Organizations
yes.
and those
free
organizations.
Free breakfast, right. Educating communities, et cetera, et
they
cetera.
They looked at the racketeering issues and
was
some
at
of those.
The lowest.
Right. Let's take a look and listen to Rick in Miami. Rick, you're on the radio. Go ahead.
Hi. First, let me start with, I've been in Miami since 1968. My family migrated from Cuba, and I love this town. And I believe this is a great city. Obviously, very segregated, and that solution is extremely complex. But here's the situation. We understand where all the violence is. We understand where it is concentrated. Put a cop on every corner 24/7, but this is where it gets complicated. When you do that, you make more police stops, you make more arrests, and then the question of racism comes into play also. Don't arrest somebody for a joint. Talk to them. Take it away from them. Don't always make an arrest. Have communication,
Rick,
with the community.
We got it. And we've seen some communities decriminalize small amounts of marijuana, for instance. Dr. Zacherson, your thoughts again on this idea of more policing.
Again, it'll lead to mass incarceration. Now, the public health approach in dealing with firearm-related violence around the country is to look at the causes of the causes upstream and deal with them there.
Well, you said something there that's worth exploring as well, which is to look at gun violence as a public health matter, in addition to traditionally looking at it through the lens of public safety. Let's go to Keith in Miami. Keith, you are on the radio. Go ahead. Welcome.
Yes, hello, hello. How are you all?
Doing well, thank you. Your thoughts?
Yes, my name is Keith Loren. I'm known all over the world as the Spice King. I've been featured on many different television shows, and I grew up in Opa-locka. I went to those schools there, and it was known as the Triangle. It was a horrible area at the time. There was syringe needles in our schoolyard. There was violence all the time. I had to fear my safety walking to the school buses.
Do you still live there today, Keith?
No, I moved out. And the only reason I was able to survive all of that is for programs that helped young people. I got involved in entrepreneurial programs. My parents put me in acting and in drama classes. And I think that whenever there's poverty and lack of opportunity, people fight, they're angry, they're eager, they're hungry. And if the governments, the city councils would put more programs for young people and programs for the parents, that would be the solution, because it would provide opportunities financially through entrepreneurship and through education, through activities. That's the only way out. That's how I've been able to make it out, and that's why I'm successful for today. And it's not a race issue. It's a poverty issue, and it's a lack of opportunity issues. And in the schools that I was in at the time, there was a stark contrast in the education from the Miami and towards Broward schools. The caliber of the teachers was different. The caliber of the education opportunities were different. And I think that we should all focus our efforts not on the out exterior, which is the race, but on the systemic opportunities that are available. We need more of them.
Keith, we got it. Congratulations on your success. Thank you for sharing your story with us. Dr. Zacherson, you allude to this in the study. You write that the study is, quote, the first step toward identifying communities that are most in need of an integrated violence reduction strategy. What are the pieces of that strategy in your estimation?
So again, using the public health model, it ranges from the individual to the family, the neighborhood, and society at large. Really, the most important thing you can do, which is large and complex, as our last caller mentioned, is address structural violence. Again, we're no longer in the 1980 mindset of just penalize the quote-unquote bad guys, but going upstream like I mentioned, to the causes of the causes. You need public education that's robust, mixed-income housing. First and foremost, you need adequate food for kids. Mm. We're talking food insecurity is a huge problem in Miami.
Now, let's be clear about food insecurity. Define what that means. And you're talking about neighborhoods that are within a short walk, really, of downtown Miami, of Wynwood, of the Design District, of areas that are certainly up and coming, if not affluent.
Correct. These are families that have not enough income to pay for food, rent, and all other costs of living, or they are insecure in terms of they may not have adequate meals daily that they need, or they may eat one meal a day only because they simply do not have the funds to pay for it.
Doug Hanks, finally on this issue, I just want to ask you your thoughts on the tenor of the debate at the public policy level. You identified Commissioner Jordan and her efforts, which failed at the county level. When you hear some of the strategies that Dr. Zacherson identifies upstream, going to the sources of the sources, are public agencies prepared for that kind of real structural policymaking as opposed to something that is more potentially temporary?
Well, Miami-Dade has made some big changes on what they were sort of calling the prosperity agenda last year. They did essentially decriminalize marijuana possession. You can now issue a civil citation if you're a police officer. They've done things like ban the box involving criminal records for employment applications and things like that, which I think is aimed at tackling maybe not the short-term violence problem, but the long-term prosperity. How do we lift incomes in these crime-ridden neighborhoods? Obviously, that is the best solution, correct, Doctor?
Absolutely. Yeah. Couldn't agree with you more.
And Nadej, finally, the community voice in this, how are they or how potentially can they continue to exert themselves in this? If we see these public opinion polls where gun violence is the number one issue for Black South Floridians, but far down the list for other racial groups, how do we begin to spread this conversation beyond just the hyper focus of these particular communities?
I mean, I think anytime you have a situation where you have 14-year-olds, 15-year-olds getting shot, that's a community problem, regardless of where you live. I think if it becomes a conversation of this is not happening in my zip code, then we have failed as a community, because this is Miami-Dade County and it's happening in Miami-Dade County.
Nadej Green is a reporter for us here at WLRN. Dr. Tanya Zacherson is a trauma surgeon at Jackson Memorial Hospital. She's in her scrubs and lab coat and stethoscope today. So thank you for taking time out from the Trauma Center. She's with the UM Miller School of Medicine and the co-author of the report looking at gunshot victims and gunshot fatalities in Miami-Dade County through the lens of the Ryder Trauma Center over the last 11 years. Doug Hanks with the Miami Herald will continue with us. Still to come, is South Florida ready for more casinos? Do you want another casino? Do you want a casino in Miami-Dade County? Call us now, 800-743-WLRN. The effort to expand gambling in Florida is next on the Roundup.